Welcome to GeoTalk, the podcast for geocaches down under.
In this episode of GeoTalk, we speak to Round Circle about geocaching in the goldfields and in the middle of the dark, and we give you some more tips on how to find a cache. All this and more on GeoTalk. Welcome to episode 35 of GeoTalk. We had a little bit of an extra delay since the last one. I think it's 3 weeks since we put out episode 34. But in between that time, there's been a few videos that have gone up both on the GeoTalk podcast feed and also on our YouTube channel. And first of all, thank you to all of those who have entered so far in the Axis of Evil video competition. Now, what I've asked you to do is take a little bit of video. It doesn't have to be at an Axis of Evil geocache. It can be at any geocache. And just tell us what you love about geocaching or what you're doing or just anything in general. And so far we've had 4 entries into the competition and you've got a couple of days left. It's until the end of the month, end of September, and there's some shiny geo coins to be won. So quick, grab your video camera or your mobile phone and get out there this weekend and drop me an email at geotalk@mac.com and let me know. Something that's coming up on the horizon, courtesy of the Podcaching Podcast, is the WWFM4. That's the Worldwide Flash Mob. They've set a date for it. It's the 8th of November of this year. And we already have 2 cities that are listed, and we'll mention those a little later in the podcast. But how about we see if we can get one in each state this time? The US seem to have got one, I think, in almost all of the 50 states. And come on, Australia, there's only 6 states and 2 territories. We can do it. So let's see if we can get behind them and show Podcacher that we can be part of the WWFM excitement as well. Some of the chatter on the Geocaching Australia forums have been about the iPhone and the software that's available for it, but we're starting to see, just today, in fact, was launched Google's Android phone through HTC, I think it was that company. They put out the G phone, and it'd be interesting to see what sort of geocaching applications they might have on that platform, particularly as they're already touting the GPS ability and using Google Maps and so forth. So if you've got any reviews or you've had any experience with the iPhone, or if you're overseas and you've got your hands on the G phone already and you're trying that out, let us know. And don't forget, if you've got a Symbian phone, a lot of the Nokias and I think the Samsungs and maybe even some of the Ericssons, which use the Symbian platform, there are some tools you can use for that as well, including the Geocaching Navigator by Trimble. You can try that out as well. So check out, get on the web or get on the forums to find out a bit more about how you can use your mobile phone for geocaching. Our last episode, we spoke to Shauna from Groundspeak about Where I Go, and one of the things she mentioned was that they were looking at using the Java platform to also launch Where I Go, and Jeremy on the Groundspeak forums also mentioned that last week. After some questions about the iPhone platform, he did confirm that they are working on the Java platform and that should be coming out sometime this year. So that'll be exciting for those of us who haven't been able to use the Windows Mobile or the Colorado or the Oregon GPS devices. So keep your eyes and ears open for that. And also on Where I Go, I noticed a third one's been published in Australia and Queensland from Hormel Ford. So now there are 3 of them around the country. Let's see if they can get a few more around the place. In Geocaching Association news, down in Tasmania, they've recently had a bit of a fund drive for raising some funds for the association, selling a fairly rare geocoin down there, and things are starting to motor along. And up in New South Wales, the Geocaching New South Wales Association had its first meeting earlier in the month, and hopefully we'll see some things there, and we'll see a few more associations maybe pop up around the country. And also on fundraising, the Geocaching Australia website has currently got a fundraising drive to fund a new server. So if you're interested in supporting that, head over to geocaching.com.au and there are links on their front page on how you can assist them. Well, that's about all that I've got for the intro. Just a mention to all the Tasmanian geocaches. I've already put a post in the forums, but the Spin Doctors are heading down to the southern state, and we're looking forward to meeting a few of you down in Hobart and hopefully also in Launceston. So keep your eyes and ears open, or check out your caches anyway, because hopefully we'll be logging a few as we make our way around the state in a month's time. Well, before we get into our first interview, it's time for the GeoTalk trivia question. And this one is, how many webcam geocaches are there still active in Australia? So how many webcam caches are there still active in Australia? The answer to that at the end of the podcast. Well, on this episode of GeoTalk, we once again head down to the southern state of Victoria, but instead of Melbourne, we're heading to one of my old stomping grounds, one of my old uni towns of Ballarat, and we're going to be chatting with Mel from Round Circle. Welcome to the podcast.
How are you going? Thanks for having me.
Now, hopefully you're thawing out. It's springtime. The flowers blooming and the wattle, is it out down in Ballarat?
It's all just coming out right now. We've probably been through the coldest bit of the year. We've had a little bit of snow in the last couple of weeks. Usually get snow about once a year, so it's been an interesting time to be out caching.
So all the geocaches are coming out of hibernation now?
They are. There's more people coming through to visit us, travelling through for the end of the football season. There's often people coming through from Adelaide stopping off on the way through.
Tell me a little bit about geocaching in Ballarat, because, I mean, when I was there, it was back in, golly, the early 90s, so I think there was no such thing as the sport. I mean, you've been doing it for how many years now?
I've been doing it for a bit over 2 years, and I think Ballarat's had some active caches for quite a long time. MB was here in the early days of caching, and there's a couple of caches around here from the early 2000s. But in the last 6 months or so, there's been a number of new players coming to the sport, and there's been a couple who've put a lot of caches out, and some of them have been some very clever caches, some very clever series of caches, and some very clever hides in both the way they're hidden and in the things that we as caches need to do to actually go through and find them. Some of them have been some clever puzzles that you need to work out before you go and find them, and some of them you have to go and do things when you're actually at the site, which has been great. It's been great to see some different things come out.
And Ballarat, of course, is in the middle of gold country. Has anyone managed to find a gold nugget hidden next to a cache somewhere?
Not that they've told me about.
It's probably a good incentive for anyone who's thinking of going geocaching down to Victoria, because both your city and nearby Bendigo are famous for gold. You never know what you might turn up in the bush.
You never know, I suppose, if you were into gold detecting. There's lots of caches around in old mine sites, so you could mix the two together. But there's certainly a lot of caches hidden near old mines, and there's one or two that are actually hidden in some old mines. So if you want to explore those sorts of things, then this might be the place to come. I have. In 06, I started caching, and I decided I was interested in buying a GPS just because I thought it was an interesting sort of a thing. I didn't have any particular need for it. And whilst I was researching it on the web, I stumbled across geocaching. There was a couple near my home, and so I endeavoured to go and find them just with the aid of the Google Maps, with no success whatsoever. So I went and got a GPS. And I still didn't have much success for a little while. I got a bit more software because I bought a Bluetooth GPS that runs with a PDA, bought a bit more software to connect it up, and then eventually I found my first one, and I haven't really looked back.
And so what model of GPS are you using?
I use a little Bluetooth GPS that connects to a Windows PDA or a PDA that runs Microsoft Windows CE, and mostly I run Beeline. And also have TomTom, which runs on there. So between those two programs, I'm able to get out to where I need to go, and mostly I can find the cache.
Now, one of the reasons why we're chatting to you is you like to do a bit of caching after hours, and this is a topic that I know a few people have asked me about, tips and sort of ideas on how to go nighttime caching. So tell us a little bit about why you like going out at night.
Well, I really enjoyed going out at night, not so much because I particularly like caching at night as because that's when I've had the time to go and do it. I commute fairly regularly between Melbourne and Ballarat, which I do now on the train, but I used to drive, and so I used to break the journey up by going and finding one or two caches on my way home. A lot of the Caught at Work cunningly concealed cache container series I found in the evening. Usually by the time I was driving home, it was dark, and that meant that I was finding them at night. Similarly, I've travelled a little bit interstate, mostly up to Sydney and Brisbane, and again, by the time I've finished work and I've actually got a bit of free time and able to go out, well, again, it's dark, and so I've ended up hunting for caches at night. But they haven't all been urban caches. I've done a couple of caches that are a little bit more out of town. I find you need to be a little bit more careful about where you go. You can't see the tracks as well when you're driving along in the car at night, so and I'm fairly conscious of the fact that I'm on my own. So if I was to get stuck, then that could be a fairly painful experience, so I'm probably more likely to walk in than drive in. And you don't usually have as much lighting as you might like to have, so again, I'm just a little bit cautious about getting off the beaten track. It would be fairly easy to get confused and wonder about how to get back again. You can't always be sure that the GPS is going to work and get you back home again, although I haven't had a problem in doing that.
Obviously, one of the big disadvantages of caching at night is that it is harder to see. I mean, what other problems do you have when you are looking for a cache at night?
One of the things I've found is that because as I mentioned, that I use a PDA, it's got a screen and it's got a little green light that says the phone's working that flashes, and a blue light that says Bluetooth's working, and the GPS has got a power on light and another light that flashes. And so I feel like a bit of a Christmas tree walking around. So if you're walking near homes, perhaps in a park, that during the day might be quite busy, but at night people might wonder why you're there, and I feel I'm much more conspicuous. I've never actually had anyone say anything to me or even look at me, particularly at night, but I'm much more conscious of that. And security people, again, wandering around through town, tend to be a bit more curious about why you're there at night. And look, I've never had any particular problem, but I am a bit more cautious about it at night.
And what about some of the advantages? Are there advantages to finding caches at night?
Well, in urban areas, the people generally aren't around, so there might be places that at lunchtime you simply can't get in to see, but at night people either aren't around or they're not really interested in paying attention to you, so you can have a much more of a good look around. If it's out of the way a little bit, sometimes shining the torch around will actually reflect off things that you wouldn't normally see during the day. So I've had a few where I've got close to the spot and just sort of had a scan around with a torch, and the cache has sort of waved back at me and been a very quick find, or as other people have said, it's actually taken them quite a while to find it during the day. So that can be helpful as well.
All right, well, you've alluded to the fact that you carry a torch. What other items would you take along with you that you may not normally take in the daytime?
Look, I don't know that I take a lot of extra equipment, and at least initially I didn't even take a torch. I just take along the PDA and really work with natural light. And the PDA put out enough light for me to go and find it, although it wasn't really ideal, and so now I've got a torch in the car. I don't use a particularly bright torch. It's just a little handheld one that runs off a couple of batteries. I'm sure you could get something much more powerful, but a lot of the time you're in places where you don't particularly want to draw attention to yourself, which is, I guess, the same during the day, and so just a small torch is more than adequate. Look, I really don't take anything extra that I wouldn't take during the day.
Safety would be something that you'd have to take into consideration, because you mentioned that you're working alone, searching alone, and you're doing it at night. What sort of precautions do you take to make sure that if something goes wrong, you're going to get out of that situation?
I'm just perhaps a little bit more sensitive about where I might actually go, particularly if you're out in the bush a little bit. Where I live in Ballarat, there's a lot of mine shafts, so I make a point of sticking to the track, certainly more so than I would during the day. I'm more likely to walk in from where I park the car than drive in, because I'm pretty confident I'm going to be able to walk back out, whereas if the car gets stuck, then that's going to be a bit of a predicament. And I do keep a bit of an eye on what sort of the time is and how much light there is. So if there's no moon, then I'm much more cautious. Whereas if it's a clear night and a full moon, then that's not a lot different to walking around during the day a lot of the time. And so then I'm much more comfortable about going in and having a look around.
Mm. Tell us what's been your most memorable experience from caching at night.
I did a cache that was on the side of a lake, and I had to, I think if I'd actually found the right track to drive in, and I could have easily driven in at night, and in fact, it was a bit sandy, and so I was rather worried about it, so I walked in about a kilometre from the road, but it was a clear night, and there were some more animals around than there were during the day, and it was just, once I got out to the lake, it was still and clear, and the moon shining off it, it was just really pleasant time to be there. And the fact that I was in a suit just made it even more idyllic, I think.
It'd be quite amazing sight bumping into you then walking back from the cache in your suit in the middle of nowhere.
It would. And it's probably how I've done a lot of the caching is in a suit. So I've been in a lot of different parks and a number of different places where I think, well, if someone was to come across me, I would be an unusual sight.
And finally, what's probably one of the low lights, pardon the pun, of when you've been night caching? Any moments where you've thought, what am I doing here?
No, look, I don't think so. No more so than during the day. It's frustrating when you can't find something, but it's frustrating when you can't find something during the day. It's generally been a positive experience for me, I think. It's certainly given me a lot more time to go and find things, whereas if it was only doing it during the day, I think I would have found a lot less than I have. And certainly when I go interstate with work, while I'm only there during the week and I'm only available, I've only got time sort of later at night, and you've got the opportunity to either sit in the hotel and watch TV or go out and do some caching. So I'd much rather be out doing some caching.
Well, with the warmer weather coming along and hopefully summer not that too far away, it'll be even more enjoyable getting out there at night. Look, Mel, thanks very much for chatting to us about caching in Ballarat and at night, and hopefully you'll find many more in the dark.
Hey, it's been great to talk to you.
Time now to look at some of the events. On the 7th of October is the Southeast Geocaching Society, SECS, at the pub event number 8. That's down at Mount Gambier. And on the 1st of the 11th is the Acuna Port Meet and Greet over in Port Macquarie on the mid-north coast of New South Wales. And then on the 8th of the 11th, as I mentioned at the start of the podcast, is one of the first WWFMs listed, and that's the Throw the Book at It event, which will be held outside the State Library in Melbourne, down in Victoria. And there's also another event, now I'm not too sure if this is coinciding with the WWFM or not, down in the ACT's Picnic at Auroral. So that's down at Auroral Valley, down there in the centre of the ACT, south of Canberra. If you've got an event that you want to give a plug or promote, just call it through on the GeoTalk hotline on 02 850 GEO, or that is 850 436. Time now for our geocaching tip of this episode. Now, this is one that we've probably covered a number of times through the podcast, and you've probably read and heard from other podcasts and websites, but we thought we'd go over it again just one more time, because there might be some things that you've forgotten or that you haven't realized in the past. And we're going to have a look at some of the steps you might take when you're finding a geocache. Now, remember, each geocache is different, so every time you're going to look for them, there are subtle differences, but there are a few things that you should always take into consideration. Now, the first thing is preparation. Use maps. Use heaps of maps, whether it's Google or Where Is, some of the street directories, and especially if you're going out bush, some of the paper topographic maps can be very, very useful to get your hands on. Some people are also using things like Aussie Explorer, which have the topo maps loaded into them as well. I always find it's handy to print out a topo map because if your batteries die and you've got yourself a compass, which I hope you all have, you can use your compass and your topo map and get out the old traditional 20th century way. One thing you should also consider is dressing appropriately for the conditions and the location. Now, obviously, we're heading into summer down here in Australia, so you're going to make sure that you've got light clothing, but also take into account that it can get cool, so take layers with you. Also, make sure that you take water and any other supplies that you need if you're going on a long hike or a long walk. If you're driving to a geocache, make sure you find a safe parking spot that's close to the geocache. Now, that may not necessarily be the closest point to the geocache, so make sure you look around and find somewhere that you know your car's going to be when you get back, so it hasn't been towed away or written off by somebody. When you're walking through the bush or walking through any parkland, make sure you stick to the tracks. Don't cross into any private property and definitely don't go into any dangerous locations. As you're heading towards the geocache, don't stare at your GPS receiver all the time. It's very tempting to stare at the arrow and watch the numbers count down and follow the arrow. Look at it now and then, but be on the lookout as well on the path for any tripping hazards or overhangs. Make sure that, because there are things that could hit you in the head, and also to look out for any other dangers such as snakes or other wildlife. When you get within 10 meters of the geocache, stop. Let the GPS catch up to you because quite often it will lag behind. Once you've stopped and then let the GPS catch up, have a look at where it's telling you you need to head and how far away. And if it's still within 10 meters, it's probably best now to put the GPS away because you're in the general vicinity. When you're searching for the geocache, have respect for the environment, whether it be an urban or rural or bush setting. If you have to move objects such as rocks or logs, replace them exactly how you found them. Try to avoid trampling on any plants and grasses and don't annoy any wildlife that might be in the area. After you've signed the logbook and completed any swaps, make sure all the contents are back inside the cache, that you've left nothing outside. Make sure the geocaching note is on the top so that if anyone accidentally finds it, they know what it's about. And then replace the cache exactly as you found it. On your way back from the cache, remember stick to the tracks and keep your eyes and ears open for anything that's around you. And finally, if you're running late and you're running behind or you just want to grab that one extra cache on the way home, let somebody know as soon as possible. And also let them know before you leave so that if you don't return at the specified time, they know where to look for or where to send the emergency services. Well, there's some tips on how to find a cache. I'm sure, as I said at the start, you probably know all those, but it's always helpful to have a bit of a reminder. Now, if you've got your own tip that you want to give to us at GeoTalk, just drop us an email at geotalk@mac.com, or you can even call it in on 02-800-50-436.
Hey everyone, this is Sunny.
And Sandy.
From sunny San Diego, California.
And we are the host of the Podcatcher Podcast.
Podcatcher is a free weekly audio show all about geocaching.
We cover caching news,
tips and tricks, and tools of the trade.
We also have interviews, fun contests, and caching stories from around the world.
We chat about caching goodness
and just have a whole lot of fun.
Come and join the international geocaching community at podcatcher.com.
Stay safe and
keep on caching.
Well, unfortunately, there's nothing in the GeoTalk mailbag for this episode, so it's straight into the answer for the GeoTalk trivia question, and that was, how many webcam geocaches are there in Australia that are still active? And the answer is 14. You'll find one in New South Wales, three in Western Australia, four in South Australia, and six in the state of Victoria. Well, that's all for this slightly shorter edition of GeoTalk. We were going to play you the interview with Rabideau from the eastern suburbs of Melbourne, but we've decided to hold that off for the next episode, which will be coming out in about 2 weeks' time. Also coming up on the GeoTalk feed and also on our YouTube channel, check out our latest videos. They'll be coming out, the next one where we do a maintenance walk up Tibimbilla Peak and even get some snow fall on us during that walk. So check out those at geotalkpodcast.com or at youtube.com/geotalk. Until next time, safe geocaching.